Americans say that having children is one of life's most vital goals. In a national opinion survey by the University of Chicago, 81% responded that having children was an important personal value. Infertile couples who struggle for a pregnancy often feel an intense incentive for children from mass culture and from within. Alex is 36 years old and lives in Philadelphia. He and his wife Patty first discovered they have an infertility problem 7 years ago.
You know, I was programmed like everybody else societally that you want to have offspring. I think it's probably genetic, it's survival of our species. Somewhere deep inside of us, it's something that, you know, we're all driven to attempt.
Patty says both her parents and Alex's supported their struggle to get pregnant in thoughtful ways, but even that added to the pressure to conceive.
My parents already had two grandchildren. Alex's parents didn't, and, you know, it was something that they always dreamed of for their children. They always dreamed of for their own lives, so it was a loss that they were feeling too.
Social scientists say the cultural imperative to reproduce and corresponding fears of infertility grow and wane from one era to the next. Historian Elaine Tyler May says the 1960s and 70s marked a lull in the social pressure to have kids, which in turn showed up in pop culture, where icons like Mary Tyler Moore and James Bond were unburdened by children. In the 1990s, May says, procreation is cool. Just witness the hipsters shopping at Baby Gap stores, or the movies coming from baby-besotted Hollywood.
There are times when you would have couples in the movies never having babies. You never even hear them mentioned. Everyone is having babies. Married, not married, man, woman, gay, not gay, it doesn't matter. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger had a baby in a recent movie. I mean, everyone is having babies.
You're a guy, Alex. This is totally against the natural order. Guys do not have babies. We leave that to the women. That's part of the beauty of being a guy. Didn't your father ever have this talk with you?
If you could feel for 1 minute the sense of absolute joy and connection that carrying your baby brings, you would understand.
Listen to you.
Press accounts today abound with articles on the fertility fever and the baby craving that supposedly grips the American middle class. According to one study, most Americans say becoming a parent truly marks the entry into adulthood, more so than getting a job or getting married. To understand what she calls our baby-crazed era, Elaine Tyler May suggests looking back about 50 years. This March of Time newsreel comes from 1946.
Among the wartime production feats of which the United States is pardonably proud, not least are those which have led to a spectacular rise in the nation's birth rate.
Throughout the 1940s and 50s, magazines and films described reproduction in patriotic terms.
The baby boom era was a time of extreme pronatalism, or a strong cultural sense that everyone ought to have children and ought to want children. And, you know, you'd find headlines in the 1950s, like one that I found, a picture of Elizabeth Taylor with a baby that said, "A woman at last."
May says that if giving birth in the 50s signified true womanhood, becoming a father was for a man a badge of social respectability. For couples who could not have children, post-war medical science promised tantalizing new treatments. There were synthetic female hormones to jumpstart troubled ovaries, and artificial insemination to dodge the problem of low sperm counts. The press also published dramatic stories about experiments at in vitro fertilization, propagating human eggs in a laboratory dish.
From Good Housekeeping Magazine, 1953. Until recently, a barren woman, or a woman who had been unable to conceive, could only hide her heartache. Today, she has a right to hope for children. In the past few years,
articles like this fueled a surge in demand for infertility services, but 1950s science promised more than it could deliver. Infertility treatments only worked about a third of the time. In the 1960s and 70s, the birth control pill, the sexual revolution, legalized abortion, women's lib, all gave Americans a new sense of power over their reproductive careers. Historian Sarah Evans says that for earlier generations of women, pregnancy was something that happened to them. But she says the twin liberations promised by birth control and infertility medicine begat an illusion of human control over biology.
And the notion that you could decide when to have a child and that you could fit that into all sorts of other plans about your life is deeply ingrained in the American middle class. And to plan it and then not have it happen is a bit of an affront.
By the 1980s, an increasing number of American women planned to start having children later in life. For some, that meant waiting so long that pregnancy became biologically difficult, if not impossible, to achieve. That trend fueled a popular perception that infertility is on the rise. A woman's fertility does decline as she grows older, especially after age 40, but most couples who try to get pregnant in their 30s eventually do, though it can take longer. Philadelphia author and gynecologist Wanda Rahner says too many of her patients expect to be infertile.
A 35-year-old who has a baby will say, well, I have to have a baby next year again, because if I wait 2 years, that'll be it and I won't have my chance again. And trying to convince them otherwise, even though they may not be able emotionally to handle having those two children right away, is impossible, because it's this generally held belief that it's either now or never.
Rahner co-wrote a book on infertility with her sister, the historian Margaret Marsh. They argue that American infertility rates have actually decreased since the 1960s, with one exception, women aged 20 to 24. In that group, Marsh says infertility has tripled, due mainly to the spread of sexually transmitted diseases that can cause infertility. In fact, the infertility rate for married middle-class couples has stayed at 10 to 13% for more than a century. Historian Elaine Tyler May.
There's a myth out there that infertility is a disease or epidemic among the affluent, the privileged, especially professional women who postpone childbearing and bring it on themselves. Absolutely not true. Infertility has always been and continues to be much, much more common among the poor.
That's because lower income people typically have poorer health, which can lead to decreased fertility. And less affluent Americans typically cannot afford infertility treatments, which can easily cost $10,000 or more and are usually not covered by insurance. May is disturbed by what she considers the disproportionate level of media concern over infertility among the affluent.
You see these, you know, magazine covers with the prosperous white middle-class woman looking sadly at the empty cradle. The implication is that society should invest its resources here because these are the people we should be helping to create the nation's future citizens.
In at least one way, May says, little has changed over the past 100 years. Americans affluent enough to pay for infertility treatments get them, and those who can't pay don't. For Minnesota Public Radio, this is Stephen Smith reporting.